When I was in seminary in Rome, on Thursdays we would have formation conferences in the evening at 8 o'clock. And then afterwards, all of the different states would get together and all the seminarians from that state would hang out. So us Missouri guys were strong in numbers. There was like 7 of us. And we would have these rowdy, rambunctious times late at night after a long day of going to class and studies and a lot of times pick up basketball or whatever was going on that day. And then 8 o'clock at night, we have this formation conference and your mind is just sideways by the end of it. And one of my friends, he's a priest now, he would always host us. And in the seminary rooms, you know, you've got your bed and your bookshelf and desk, but we all had a sink and a mirror. And above his mirror, there was a Latin phrase there. And I was just like so done by the time we ever got in there. I had seen this Latin phrase and my mind just clicked off. I never cared to even translate it. But after so many times of being in his room, I finally look up at this thing and I'm like, not only is it nice calligraphy, it's meaningful. And he had this phrase from tonight's gospel. In Latin it said, Domine ut videam, which means, Master, I want to see. And I looked at this so often, and then I realized this is meaningful for him. Like, is this meaningful for me? Master, I want to see. And I had to start praying with it. I'm like, why is that? I don't know, it was just ringing in my heart a lot at that time. And I started, as I was going about my day, trying to figure out or make a decision, I'd say, Lord, I want to see. Or as I'm going through the streets of Rome and seeing the poor there on the streets, I'm saying, Lord, I want to see. Or as I'm waking up in the morning and I'm not really wanting to get on with the rest of my day, I would say it, like, Lord, I want to see. It just became the cry of my heart for a few months, just always there, present before me. I want to see more of you. I want to see what you're up to. I want to see less of the world. I want to see more of how it is that you're living and interacting. And it was just this simple phrase written above his mirror that just spurred on a whole bunch of faith, which for us is always an encouragement. We need to find creative ways that we can unite our hearts to the Lord, that this desire was welling up in me, fanning that desire that each of us has to be in communion with God. Master, I want to see. That's the desire of Bartimaeus in today's gospel. And I'm going to break this passage down. It's not all that long, just bit by bit, because it's so good and so rich. You have Bartimaeus there, a blind man, begging. And he cries out as he hears that Jesus is there. And he says, Jesus, Son of David, have pity on me. Bartimaeus might be physically blind, but he has a spiritual alertness. He's not spiritually blind. He's heard from other people. Maybe he hasn't seen it clearly, but he's heard from other people the things that Jesus has done. And when he does the arithmetic in his head, that he has healed lepers, that he has raised the dead to new life, he sees all of the signs and he realizes this is what the prophets told us the Messiah would do. That a descendant of David would come, and these are the things that he would do. And nobody has yet called Jesus yet the Son of David, but this man cries out. There's a spiritual sight that he sees that Jesus must be the Messiah. So he calls him by that name. It's an act of faith. Jesus, Son of David, if you've done it for everyone else, you can do it for me. Have pity on me. That he comes to Jesus with these eyes of faith. But then as he keeps calling out, people rebuke him. It says, they rebuked him, telling him to be silent, to stop, to give up, to stop being a nuisance in front of other people. The world doesn't always understand and tries to shove us Christians aside, that you all are a nuisance to us. The crowd generally in the Gospels is a bad thing. The crowd was the one that condemned Jesus to the cross. The crowd was the one that was always mobbing after Jesus. And so the crowd is there to put this man down, and yet his heart is for the Lord. And there's this gravitational pull that wants to suck him into the life of the crowd, to be against the Lord. And yet there's something that he is searching for, something that he wants, that the crowd won't be able to silence, in him. And we need to be careful how much we let the world in, that you and I have something of a mob mentality or a crowd mentality, that we just sort of go along with what everyone else is doing. But he's rebuked. Jesus had said before in Luke's gospel, "Blessed are you when they insult you. Blessed are you when they exclude you on account of the Son of Man." Now this man is blessed just in this very act before Jesus performs a miracle, because the crowd wants to shoo him off, wants to put him to the side, because he's being a nuisance. The desire that has been put in Bartimaeus' heart is so good that he keeps calling out. He keeps calling out. There's a persistence that's alive in him. There's a perseverance that he won't stop. And does the Lord find that in each of us, especially in our weaknesses, that we would continue calling out to the Lord, not that we would become discouraged or despondent, that we would stop and just give up entirely? But Bartimaeus keeps calling out to the Lord. So he wants to see. That's his desire. "Jesus, I want to see." Even when we don't have it all together, are we being persistent in our relationship with the Lord? That he keeps calling out. And then Jesus finally intervenes. And he says, "Call him. Call him." And the apostles go over there, and they call the blind man, saying to him, "Take courage, get up, Jesus is calling you." Three lines in a row, we hear the word call. He intervenes. That it was Bartimaeus' job to call out, and then it's Jesus' job to intervene. I think we get this wrong all the time. That we think it's our job to fix the problems of our lives. We think it's our job that we have to figure everything out. That's not our job. Our job is to cry out to the Lord, and it's Jesus' job to intervene and to heal what needs to be healed and to redeem what needs to be redeemed and to save those parts of us that are worth saving and to leave aside what doesn't belong to God. That Jesus wants nothing for us that doesn't ultimately lead to him, that he'll let sin fall by the wayside so long as he can give us new life in some form or fashion. It's our job to cry out to the Lord in our weakness and in our need. It's his job to intervene, to heal, and to redeem. And so we see this man, Bartimaeus. He says, "Take courage, get up, Jesus is calling you." And he throws aside his cloak and springs up. He throws aside his cloak. So reminiscent of St. Paul's letters, where he says, "Throw off, put off the old man which belongs to your former way of life. Put off the old man, which belongs to your former way of life, and put on the new man, fashioned after the likeness of God, created in holiness." That as we encounter the Lord, we're also asked to spring up, to put off our former way of life, and to put on the new man, our new nature, recreated in the blood of the Lamb by what only God can accomplish in us. Not that we figure this life out, but that the Lord equips his holy ones for the building up of the church, for the building up of your family, for the building up of your relationships. That God equips us if we're willing to push off the old self, put off the old self, and to put on Christ. And then finally, Jesus asks him, "What do you want me to do for you?" It's just kind of an obtuse question. It's almost rude that Jesus asks it. That's what it feels like. "What do you want me to do for you? I'm blind," you know? It's like, but the Lord wants him to ask. He's going to bring him, draw him into a conversation, draw him into a relationship with him. "What do you want me to do for you?" And you can feel here, if you ever actually asked something of the Lord and meant it, it's kind of scary, because you're opening yourself up to being disappointed. Imagine this man says, "I want to see," and then Jesus doesn't grant his petition. But there's an element of trust here. "What do you want me to do for you?" And he has to say it. "Master, I want to see. I want to see." And Jesus tells him, "Go your way, your faith has saved you. He doesn't back down. Bartimaeus doesn't back down on his request. He doesn't say, Lord, if it's convenient for you right now, if you could do this, I'm not worthy, but if you want to give me my sight, that'd be awesome. He says, no, Master, I want to see. And he states his claim boldly. Lord, you can do this. I want to see. And Jesus grants him his request. Your faith has saved you. Go your way. And then we hear this brilliant line. Immediately he received his sight and followed him on the way. In the Old Testament, the way calls to mind the Exodus, which literally just means in Greek, the way out. The Exodus was God laboring on behalf of his people to pull them out of slavery into a land flowing with milk and honey. That God brought them out. And Jesus has a new exodus that he's performing, that he wants to pull us out of our misery, out of our separation from God, into communion with the true and living God. And the early Christians in Acts chapter 4, we hear that they referred to themselves as those who belong to the way. Those who belong to the way, even before that they were called Christians, they belong to the way. The way of life that Jesus taught his apostles. The way of living that it separates them from the rest of the world. The way that these early Christians were eventually brutally martyred and killed in public. Bartimaeus begins to follow Jesus on the way. And in case we excuse ourselves too quickly, as far as this scene goes, you're not Jesus. You're not the one who's supposed to bring sight to other people. You and I are Bartimaeus in this story, sitting by the roadside, begging. And when the Lord passes by, do we have the strength of soul, the conviction that Jesus can do something? Do we have the spiritual energy to say, Jesus, Son of David, have pity on me, convicted that he can actually do something? Are we willing to double down when people sort of put us to the side, when the Christian life becomes a little bit inconvenient to the way that maybe I desire to live in my own way? And am I willing to state boldly, Master, I want to see? As Jesus grants him this gift, this miraculous healing, he opens his eyes, and who's standing there before him? The first person that this man ever sees is Jesus himself. To behold the face of Christ, beautiful and resounding in compassion. Master, I want to see. That's the prayer that we bring before the Lord, now and always. That we can see the Lord in the small things and in the big things. We can see the Lord when we're making decisions. We can see the Lord when my spouse is frustrating me. We can see the Lord when things are going wrong at work or at home. Master, I want to see what you're doing. And have the faith to receive sight so that we can follow him on the way.